This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Yesterday, CBS canceled its scheduled broadcast of The Reagans, and as fascinated as we are about its stories of the romance between the former president and his first lady, the off-screen drama of political maneuvering, outrage, and boycotts might make a better movie. Its defenders defend the docudrama, rather its makers defend the docudrama, as an historically accurate account that portrays the achievements and the flaws of an American president. Its critics say it's a left-wing hatchet job of a great man who is too ill to defend himself. It's important to note that very few people have actually seen The Reagans, and it now looks as if those who want to will have to wait until next spring and subscribe to the pay cable network Showtime. Part of this controversy is about historical accuracy, whether or not the filmmakers got it right, but it's also about the charmed place that President Reagan holds for many Americans and for conservatives in particular. It also raises questions about how television interprets history and why that's important. This hour, we'll discuss both those topics, and we'd like to hear your thoughts on the controversy. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. To start, though, we want to focus on what actually happened here. Joining us is J. Max Robbins, a senior editor at TV Guide. He's in our bureau in New York. It's good of you to be with us today.
Thanks, Neil.
Where did this project get started?
Well, it had its origins, actually, at ABC. And our understanding is that when it was at ABC, it was kind of a kinder, gentler look at the Reagans and their marriage. ABC eventually passed on it. It went to CBS. And then things started to heat up.
Now, when did it start to heat up? When did concerns start to be expressed about this movie?
What happened was a script leaked to someone at the New York Times. And certain elements that were revealed in that article were quite explosive and created quite a controversy. And where you have this perpetual news cycle between the internet and 24-hour news and radio, the protest, and it seemed really orchestrated against this film, just gathered all this momentum.
Now, as we've mentioned, very few people have actually seen the film. An 8-minute version, a clip reel, if you will, was sent around to critics. We have an excerpt from it, just to give people a chance to hear some of what we're talking about.
In this White House, women will not wear pants of any kind.
How do you like those Iranians releasing the hostages on my inauguration day?
I can't redecorate the White House for 50,000. I need a million, at least.
A montage of clips from the movie The Reagans. Their famous couple is played by James Brolin and Nancy Davis. Those are hardly flattering excerpts there, but was this the kind of thing that got people upset?
Oh, yeah, and I think perhaps the most controversial part of the script that came out were comments that Reagan makes in the script about people with AIDS, saying this is kind of, I paraphrase here, but a retribution from God against these sinners.
And in fact, there was a quote, not the exact quote that he uses in the film script, but something reasonably close to it, saying that maybe this was all a sin. He did say that.
Yeah, that's in Edmund Morris's biography of Reagan, and of course Edmund Morris was Reagan's authorized biographer. The thing about this, Neil, that kind of gets me as somebody who, among other things, watches television for a living, is that these historical biopics tend to be over the top. I did a little research this morning, counted over a dozen films, different permutations that were done for TV about the Kennedys.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were just wild. And I think the audience has grown to expect they're going to be like kind of campy, if you will.
Historical accuracy has never been their trademark, let's put it that way.
No, I mean, that everybody's, there's this hue and cry about this, that this might not be historically accurate. This strikes me as kind of a dog bites man story, Neil. I mean, who expects these things to be a really accurate recording of history? There's going to be a Saving Jessica Lynch movie is going to be on NBC about what supposedly happened in the rescue of Private Jessica Lynch, who was seriously injured and captured during the Iraqi war and then rescued. They say that there's a disclaimer at the beginning of this film that this is not a documentary. These are movies. This is a fictionalized account of history.
Well, let's get back. And so, oh, by the way, speaking of historical accuracy, I misspoke. Of course, Nancy Davis was the first lady's maiden name. Judy Davis is the name of the actress who was in that film clip. Now, let's get back to what actually happened here. As this story leaked about the version of the script, as that came out, you say what you describe as a reasonably orchestrated campaign of criticism. And were people actually threatening boycotts, that sort of thing?
Yeah, boycott was threatened. There was members of the Republican National Committee were involved in protesting this film. CBS was worried, and they had reason for concern. While no advertisers had said they were going to pull out, it was almost inevitable that some would.
Mm-hmm.
Then, from what I understand, Les Moonves, who's the chairman of CBS, saw a rough cut of this film and thought he was going to have a pretty hard time defending it, given the current political climate. I don't think CBS wanted to look like they were caving to pressure groups, but you also have to remember, and I think this is key here, Neil, is that CBS is part of a huge media conglomerate. They're part of the Viacom family. MTV Networks is part of it. They own a huge chain of radio stations as well. These are businesses that, in a lot of ways, are regulated by Congress. And you've got two houses of Congress and a White House and an FCC, all controlled by the Republican Party. And is Ed Rollins, who was an advisor to Reagan and a Republican political consultant, told me yesterday, this is not a good time to go piss off a bunch of Republicans. That's a direct quote.
At the same time, though, I mean, fairly early on in this project, the resumes of some of the people involved, you'd think that CBS might have sent up the red flags a little earlier.
Well, I think they didn't quite know what kind of a firestorm they were going to start with this. I think they liked the idea that there was going to be some controversy surrounding this film. Les Moonves, the chairman of CBS, he really micromanages that network to a great degree. You don't have a big $9 million miniseries that's the centerpiece of your November sweeps, an important period economically for a network, and the chairman, he's going to approve all casting. You don't cast James Brolin, Mr. Barbra Streisand, probably the most famous celebrity Democrat in America, as Ronald Reagan, and not know it's going to push a few buttons. I guess what you hope is the buttons it's going to push are ones that create curiosity and really some free promotion for your miniseries. In this case, they got more promotion, more free promotion and publicity than they could obviously handle.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us on the line is Carol, who's in San Francisco.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a mother and grandmother who both suffered from Alzheimer's disease, and I watched them deteriorate over the years. They presented the same symptoms that President Reagan did, starting in the the latter part of his first term. And so I want to know if the film addressed this issue and why the conservatives in this country refused to even acknowledge that he was president and he had Alzheimer's disease. It was very obvious. I mean, and finally, who was running the country during that period? I mean, it's always bothered me. I never knew exactly who was the real president.
Well, just to inform listeners who may not know, Carol, the president did disclose after he had left office
that he was suffering from
Alzheimer's.
While he was in office, it's obvious.
And if rumors are to be believed, he's now in the last stages of Alzheimer's disease.
I know it very only too well.
Yes,
I know how it presents. I know the symptoms.
Well, Peter Robinson, Max Robbins, what do we know about what the film actually says about his Alzheimer's disease?
From people I've spoken to who've seen the rough cut, and I saw the 10-minute tape you referred to earlier, Neil.
Mm-hmm.
It is part of the film. And I think a lot of it too. I mean, there's a couple schools of thought on this that say that, in a way, it portrays how fiercely loyal Nancy Reagan was to her husband, and how as his in the latter part of his presidency, as his health started to deteriorate, how she stepped up to protect him. However, I will say, having seen that presentation tape, I mean, it seemed that the actress Judy Davis was channeling "Mommy Dearest" as the first lady. I mean, she's chewing some scenery big time, Neil.
Mm-hmm. And Carl Sforzo Anthony, who wrote the book on which this particular film was based, I think it's his argument that indeed Nancy Reagan was running the country.
Running the country, that might be a little bit extreme, but she certainly was wielding a lot of power, according to what I know of this film. That's how she's portrayed.
Okay. Carol, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And let's go now to Ann, and Ann's with us in Walnut Creek, California, not far from San Francisco.
Hi. Well, I wanted to say, I wouldn't have watched the thing anyway, but I think it's outrageous that that the media is caving in to the right wing, and it's scary. It's really frightening to think of what's happening, what has happened to supposed free speech, and I'm just wondering what the next awful thing is going to be that now that they seem to feel they can get away with this, now this is going to happen again.
And who is they?
When I say they, I'm talking about the right wing and the people in the media who are, for unanswerable reasons, caving into them. And I think that, well, for instance, the Jessica Lynch thing, that's another thing that I wouldn't have watched or that I won't watch. That's going to be, no doubt, really upsetting to people who know what the truth is. And the fact that that this young woman has been given medals and what have you that have nothing to do with what actually happened, that there have just been lies and lies and more lies. But that isn't terribly important. It's, you know, it's frustrating but not significant. But I'm talking about what's really important vis-a-vis the war in Iraq and other wars that Bush might try to get us into.
Mm-hmm.
And if the media is going to cave in to something like this, what else are they going to cave into?
Well, Max Robbins, you cover TV.
I think this might have some unintended consequences. I mean, I think right now if you were out in Hollywood, Neil, and you had a project about the Clintons, your standard issue sleaze and tease miniseries about the powerful figures in history, you'd have a tough time selling that, too.
Well, we do know that, for example, projects are underway to do TV films about the Reverend Martin Luther King. Do you think people would be upset if, in the process of making those pictures, they portrayed his, he's obviously a great man, a sainted martyr, a national hero, but a man who was also involved in womanizing? Do you think that there would be a controversy if they decided to portray that?
Oh, there absolutely would be. And I think you'd see supporters of Dr. King be very vocal about this and what the agenda was behind it. I mean, given whatever the content of that film ends up being. I mean, it, with all this, it's kind of tough until you've seen the project.
Mm-hmm.
But when something like this happens, it does mean that things are going, projects of this nature are going to be monitored a lot more cautiously. It's interesting. A lot of the people that objected to the Reagans, this miniseries, are the same people who decry that this kind of political correctness permeates so much of the media. Yet, for Reagan, they want this kind of political correctness, if you will, sanitized version of history.
Max, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil. It's a pleasure.
J. Max Robbins is a senior editor with TV Guide. He spoke with us from our bureau in New York. When we come back from the break, we'll discuss why President Reagan matters so much even today and what's at stake in the battle over his legacy. If you'd like to join the conversation, again, the phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation, NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the fight over President Reagan's place in American memory and why this president's image matters so much. If you question that, well, you don't have to look much further for evidence at the symbolic capital than President Bush, who today signed into law a ban on some forms of abortion in the Ronald Reagan Building here in Washington. That happened, what, about half an hour ago. You're invited to join the discussion. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now to discuss the shaping of President Reagan's legacy and the place he holds in the American imagination today are Peter Robinson, the author of How Ronald Reagan Changed My Life. He joins us from Stanford University. Good to have you back on the program.
Neil, a pleasure to be with you again.
And Paul Glastris is here in Studio 3A. He's editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly. Welcome back, Paul.
Glad to be here.
Peter, let's start with you. The effort to honor President Reagan goes far beyond many actual actions of his presidency. Why is he still important after he left office so many years ago?
Well, for conservatives such as myself, he was the culmination of a movement that had been in place for, two or three decades. You look all the way back to William F. Buckley, Jr., who began working in the conservative movement immediately after the Second World War. So there's a notion of a long struggle which comes to culmination in Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan speaks in a clear, forceful way. I write in my book that as a speechwriter, I was conscious that his speeches, incidentally, it's important to note, he wrote nearly all his own speeches before becoming president, had a kind of trumpet-like quality. He told the truth as he saw it, and that had a stirring effect. His policies were profoundly conservative. He ratcheted up pressure on the Soviet Union, cut taxes, and it worked. That's the most, to us conservatives, and I would argue to all Americans, the reason Ronald Reagan's record is so important is because we can learn from it. He got a lot right.
And Paul Glastris, an article in your magazine argued a while back that the real thing being glorified in most of the accounts of President Reagan, the books, Peter Robinson's among them, is not actually President Reagan so much as conservatism.
That's right. Peter's right. He was Ronald Reagan, a man of great accomplishment and a very conservative man. Much of his record, much of what he actually did, wasn't as conservative as all that. Of course, there was the face down of the Soviet Union. There were the big tax cuts. It's also true that he raised taxes four times. It's also true that he had an abiding belief in the power of arms control negotiations to eliminate nuclear weapons. These were things that we think of as liberal. And so part of the battle that you're seeing right now over his legacy is an attempt by conservatives who kind of whitewash or airbrush out those parts of the fact that the government continued to grow, the fact that he really didn't break too many fingernails to outlaw abortion, so forth, closet tolerant and all that. That part is kind of being airbrushed out, and the parts that modern-day conservatives honor and like are being accentuated.
Peter, you actually knew President Reagan pretty well.
Yes.
Do you think that the man gets lost in the ideology sometimes?
Well, in my judgment, no. I try very hard in my book, in How Ronald Reagan Changed My Life, to convey a portrait of the man. Ronald Reagan had as many faults as an old shoe, and the notion, Max, your previous guest was suggesting that conservatives want a sanitized version. I think Paul is suggesting that in a number of recent memoirs, mine included, there's a whitewashing of Ronald Reagan. I just beg your listeners, our listeners at this moment, to read some of these books. My book talks a great deal about Ronald Reagan's faults. It also talks, Paul made the point that Reagan was conservative, but also did things that were moderate. Well, one of the things that we can learn, this may be a lesson that's especially important for conservatives, is that he was a shrewd and practical politician. A form of government was formed back when he was union leader, president of the Screen Actors Guild. He would stake out a position, hold it as long as he could, and then cut the best deal that was available. He was profoundly conservative, but also profoundly realistic. I have to say that in my book, I go into this. In other recent books, it's gone into in great detail. It's not a sanitized version, in my judgment, that people such as myself so want to see, as an accurate version, a version that's true to the man himself.
Well, Peter's a deeply honest fellow. I've not read his book, but I've read others of his, and he's, I'm sure, absolutely true that his is an accurate portrayal. I'm not sure that a lot of fellow conservatives are looking for an accurate portrayal. I think, you know, if you're looking for an accurate portrayal, you sort of let everything out, and you let people show different facets, and, you know, sometimes they get it right, sometimes they get it wrong. What you're seeing with this attempt right now, this backlash against the CBS version, which I haven't seen, I'm sure parts of it are not accurate and deeply unfair and so forth, is an instant reaction among the right to censor what they don't like, what they expect to be a negative portrayal of their guy. And, you know, there is a lot to Ronald Reagan to admire, a lot not to admire. And an accurate portrayal is one that a lot of Peter's friends would be very uncomfortable with.
Peter, I'm going to give you a chance to respond, but okay. in the following question I just wanted to put to
all
you.
Right.
Is it fair to say that at least some conservatives worry that any attack, any smear, if you will, to put it another way, of President Reagan questions conservative policies today?
No. Well, I'm sure there are some conservatives. I mean, if you take the last presidential election as a kind of index, it looks as though roughly half the country is broadly speaking conservative. Certainly among those many millions, there are people who get things wrong and are rather too brittle or defensive about Ronald Reagan and his record. I'm sure some of that is true. But this miniseries, if the accounts are to be believed, suggested that he had Alzheimer's while he was in office. His personal physician, Dr. Hutton, has repeatedly and publicly said, no, there was no evidence of that at all. This new book, Ronald Reagan, A Life in Letters, publishes some of the 5,000 letters that he wrote while he was president. These are all literate. He's in command of the facts, the situation. It's just not true. The notion that he was callous towards AIDS victims or biased against homosexuals. In 1978, here in California, there was a ballot initiative that would have made it possible to fire school teachers because they were gay. Ronald Reagan opposed it. In his first term, he ramped up spending for the National Institutes of Health as early as 1984, and from then until he left office, all of Ronald Reagan's budgets contained large amounts of money earmarked for research into AIDS. You could argue about whether it was enough, but the notion that he was callous, it's just untrue. Then, of course, there's this question now at present about timing. I had lunch about 10 days ago with Ron Reagan. Ron is a liberal. He disagrees with a lot of his father's policies, and he made it clear he wanted to stay out of this controversy. But Ron said he couldn't help wondering about the timing. His father is 92 and dying of a terrible disease. His mother is now a frail 82. She has the resources. She could long ago have put her husband in a home or hospital. She won't do it. With a small staff of nurses, she cares for her husband herself. Now, for people such as Ron Reagan, but also, I think, millions of Americans who just look at the human situation and say, this was not the time. This was an indecent thing to do.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. And we'll go first to Bob, who's with us from Pompano Beach in Florida.
Yeah, hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two comments. My first one related to your first guest. Was it Max, I think his name was?
Yes, Max Robbins.
And his idea that, I think he said, you know, what do you expect? When Hollywood produces something like this, what do you expect? Well, I think that's totally the wrong way to look at it. And your other guest suggested that if they did the same hatchet job on Martin Luther King, there would be absolute uproar. And I agree.
That was, in fact, the same guest.
The other comment was on the timing. The timing is absolutely scandalous. So that was my comment. CBS were forced to pull it off the air. They didn't pull it because of any attack of integrity. They pulled it because they had no choice. And more power to those people that forced them to do it.
Okay. Bob, thanks very much for the call. Let's get another listener on the line. And Chris is with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah. I just wanted to comment that we seem to have a knack in this country for trashing our presidents. I think the problem is that we're being unfair to our leaders a lot of times. We're fixating on the warts. And Reagan and Nancy Reagan, she was a lot more than just a shrew, and he was a lot more than a guy who was pre-Alzheimer's, and yet Hollywood loves to portray these people as down in the gutter and nasty people. It would be just as unfair to do this to any of our recent presidents. Ronald Reagan, a liberal or a conservative, it's just the way Hollywood treats people that I think we object to.
Okay, we're going to be talking more about that in the next segment, so hang with us, Chris. But let me put that to our guests in particular, as Paul Glastris, Peter Robinson mentioned the issue of timing, which does seem to be a bit insensitive.
Distasteful, absolutely. Unexpected, no. First of all, I don't think CBS or anyone else focuses on the election cycle when they're deciding what will win sweeps. Second, you know, they put out biops of Lyndon Johnson when Lady Bird Johnson was of advanced age. Same with horrible things about JFK when his wife was still alive. The president I worked for, parents were dying, and no one let up. There's no good time to do a hatchet job on a president, and I wouldn't defend, I haven't seen it, I wouldn't defend a hatchet job. I guess my point would be the sensitivity to this is part of a concerted effort by conservative backers of the president, backed by a lot of foundation money from Bradley and Olin and these other foundations, to shape the legacy. The people are there ready to... There's a battle going on when this great man dies as to how we're going to remember him. And criticisms of him and aspects of his presidency that are less than favorable are going to be attacked.
Peter Robinson, if President Reagan is accorded the honors that are normally only accorded posthumously, the airport here in Washington is named after him, the federal building where President Bush signed that bill today is named after him, there's campaigns to get something named after him in every county in this country. Isn't he fair game for the for history at this point?
Oh, he's certainly fair game for history. He's certainly fair game for history. I just don't. I mean, that's a separate show, Neil. This miniseries just wasn't history. By the way, Max Robbins, your first guest,
yes,
and Paul have made points that this is interesting to me. People have talked about this as a concerted, and it's very important to note, in my judgment, that Lou Cannon, in my judgment, the best of Ronald Reagan's biographers. Lou has written half a dozen books about him now,
and has a new recent book.
And they're
exactly
great.
They're great. They are indeed, and Lou is not a conservative.
Well,
let me finish, please. What he is a meticulous reporter. And Lou, based on what he read about this account, said that the way the miniseries portrays Ronald Reagan is, and I quote Lou Cannon, flatly untrue, close quote. Now, the notion that it's concerted, I have to say, I suppose that if there is a vast right-wing conspiracy, I occupy a position somewhere inside it. And I have to say, what struck me is how unorganized it is. The guy who put together that website, boycottcbs.com, was somebody, so far as I know, that nobody'd ever heard of the day before he did it. It's talk radio. It's the internet. I mean, it strikes me that in a certain interesting way, this is worth paying attention to, apart from Reagan, in a certain interesting way, the reaction against this is a kind of grassroots movement which has been focused on the internet almost the way Howard Dean has used the internet to raise money on politically the opposite side of the street. The Republican National Committee got into this thing very late, rather ham-handedly in my opinion too. The thing seems to me to have a grassroots feel.
Paul?
Could be. There's a tremendous grassroots love of Ronald Reagan, and that would make sense. It's also the case, however, that these other foundations have been pouring money into think tanks and into biographies. You go look on Amazon.com. There's about 500 or 600 biographies of Ronald Reagan, many of them by members of his former staff, conservative commentators. And there is, I think, a concerted effort to lionize Ronald Reagan, something we haven't seen really since Camelot or even FDR.
Paul Glastris and Peter Robinson, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller in. Nate joins us on the line from Appleton, Wisconsin.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys.
Hi.
I think what happens here is that when people become iconized, when they become icons, they become symbols for a cluster of values. And unfortunately, there's an unwillingness not only to discuss Reagan factually in terms of his personal attributes, but also a balanced examination of his legacy. I'll give you two examples. As a percentage of gross domestic product, Ronald Reagan increased the size of government, and he decreased the take of government in taxes. That led to a phenomenally huge explosion in the deficit. When the conservatives talk about the success of his tax cut, the man just dumped money into the economy like a drunk sailor. Anyone can stimulate the economy going about it in that manner. From a foreign policy point of view, there's no Soviet specialist out there that's going to say that the military buildup of the United States caused the collapse of the Soviet Union. If you look at what he actually did or did not accomplish, Gorbachev is willing to do complete and total nuclear disarmament. And at Reykjavik, Reagan said, no, we can't do that because we've got to have Star Wars, an untested technology that never was deployed.
Nate, I'm going to get a response, but I suggest when you write your script, I'd leave out this spending like a drunken sailor line. Peter Robinson?
I refer listeners to a number of my book, how Ronald Reagan changed my life. We wouldn't want to take a whole radio show with this, but Ronald Reagan ran for office. It was possible. The numbers were tight, but it was possible to do what he promised, balance the budget, cut taxes, and build up military spending. He took office, and the worst recession since the Second World War hit, it became mathematically impossible to do all three, so he cut taxes and built up our defenses. No less figures than Milton Friedman and Gary Becker, two Nobel Prize-winning economists, say publicly, and I talked to them in writing my book, that Ronald Reagan had the best economic policies of any president in the last 50 years. He built up the deficit. There's no doubt about that. He increased the deficit by $1.4 trillion, the total national debt. But during that period, 19 million new jobs were created. The longest peacetime expansion in our history was launched. And the total asset value of the United States went up by $17 trillion, a return of 12 to 1. With regard to the Soviet Union, believe me, there are plenty of experts. Henry Kissinger, whom I talked to in writing How Ronald Reagan Changed My Life, said that SDI was critical to the demise of the Soviet Union. And no less a figure than Mikhail Gorbachev has said publicly, if Ronald Reagan had not been in office when he was, I doubt, this is a very close paraphrase of Gorbachev, I doubt that what happened would have happened.
Peter Robinson, Paul Glastris, we'll give you the last word.
Well, I think that he's right that Ronald Reagan engineered a long expansion as well as deficits. The president I worked for, Bill Clinton, engineered a longer expansion and got rid of deficits. So I'll give him second best on that.
Okay, and obviously there's going to be arguments back and forth for a long time about whether who's responsible in terms of the fall of the
people are still fighting about Thomas Jefferson, Neil. I think this is marvelous about America. American history is alive. It matters, which is why Paul Glastris and I are going to arm wrestle over this next time we get together.
Absolutely.
And I'll be there to watch and maybe even referee. Paul Glastris, thanks very much for coming
in today.
Thank you. Paul Glastris is editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly, a former speechwriter for President Clinton. He was with us in Studio 3A. Peter Robinson, it's always nice to have you on the program.
Oh, Neil, a real pleasure. Thanks again.
Peter Robinson, former speechwriter for President Reagan, author of How Ronald Reagan Changed My Life. He joined us from the studios at Stanford University. When we come back from a break, we're going to be talking about the tricky business of turning history into television. Is there a particular docudrama that helped you understand a moment in American history or one that was particularly egregious in its inaccuracy? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan, back after a break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.